Welcome, everyone, to episode 177 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to finish our division previews with the Southeast Division. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Brian, I'm so psyched because we have a guest on today who is the biggest Colin Coward fan we've ever seen. And like, he's just going to be like all pro on the whole, I don't know who Bam Adebayo is. So I'm looking forward to hearing his take on it.
I was literally going to run that joke in about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm sad that it's ruined, but I'm going to do it anyway. So just brace yourself. And on that note, we do have Colin Coward's number one fan, Nikias Duncan, who writes for Everywhere. Nikias, how's it going?
I am doing fine. I would be a little better if Colin Coward was here. But we got to tame my heart a little bit.
I know. I'm going to do my best impression. I'll try.
We all know who Bam Adebayo is. Does that mean we're entitled to his salary and more?
One can only hope.
I mean, I would take that salary, yes.
Yeah.
But would you dumb yourself down to that extent to take that salary?
That's what I'm saying. If he's that dumb, he doesn't even know who Bam Adebayo is, and he's earning, like, what, probably millions a year. We know who Bam is. So
you have to appeal to the lowest common denominator. You can't provide intelligent analysis if you're getting paid that much. Would you willingly dumb yourself down to make that much money?
Look, I mean, I'm white, I'm straight, and I'm fat, so I would definitely like that would I think for most Americans, they would find me very appealing, Brian. Yeah.
You might actually be on the Supreme Court if you're here.
Yeah. Oh no. Well. I would need to go out and sexually assault someone beforehand, right. And that's probably where I'll draw the line.
Allegedly.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Allegedly. Yeah. Stephen Colbert allegedly inserted.
Yeah. All right. So we're already off the rails. Nikias, before we get underway, could you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA, which is easily the most original name on Twitter. Nikias, N-E-K-I-A-S, and NBA. I'm writing for a few places, as you said. You can find me at Miami Heat Beat. I have some more preseason words coming out today, so be on the lookout for that, kind of chronicling how their games are going, just focusing on the theme and then sprinkling in some notes. B-Ball Breakdown is still in my bio, so you can find me there eventually. B-Ball Index, that site's getting ready to launch soon. You'll catch some words from me there. And I'm just hopping on podcasts elsewhere, so I'm trying to get around this year.
Yeah, you're gonna be a busy man if Tom Thibodeau finally gives in, it seems.
He needs to, man. I know it's not taking long compared to like regular trades, but it's been so public it feels longer than it actually has been, and I'm over it already. Like, that's just
if you want to follow Nikias, if only for the ambiguous tweets he sends every day that people immediately interpret as, oh, he has a source who says the Jimmy Butler trade's about to happen. It's really like been the highlight of my week.
Man, it's hilarious, but it's also sad because like. You know, I'm obviously not Woj, but like on this specific deal, I am getting some information, and I've made it like very clear. Hey, I'm not trying to break this trade. Some of the stuff that I do here, I'm not even allowed to say. So I'm just like, if you're expecting me to be like this big newsbreaker or something of the sort, that's not going to be me. I'm just giving little nuggets here and there. And I'll tweet anything, and then my mentions are immediately flooded with eye emojis and what does this mean? And I'm just like... I don't get how Woj and Stein and Shane, I don't know how they deal with it.
They just don't read their mentions. There's no way any of those guys read their mentions.
I just love the whole subculture there is with Woj and Shams. like with the whole if there's a Vooch bomb and Shamus being like second before him, like you got beat in the comment section, like the first 50. I actually have an idea. So I always cover the trade deadline here in Denmark on a live feed. And I've spoken to the company that I work for because we're going to produce it here in February, obviously, in 2019, to get installed like a power button for both for Shams and Vooch. So whoever breaks a trade, I'm going to slam that power button and you have like something, Vooch bomb, come over the speakers. And I'm thinking with Shams, it's going to be Sham Wow or something like that. I have to figure that out. But I just, and then we keep a tally in the bottom corner of the screen, so you see like who wins trade deadline.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's gonna be a must watch. We'll be sure to plug that as it comes up.
I'm totally gonna do right. it now. Now I'm putting myself on the hook. Yeah.
Well, let's start, guys, with the Miami Heat. Obviously, we've been talking about them already, but the big story, of course, is Jimmy Butler. It seems like they are hot in on him. Mark Stein of the New York Times reported they were making progress on a deal earlier this week until Minnesota changed the terms and backed off. I forget who had the reported terms. I want to say it was like Darren Wolfson of 1500 ESPN, but Nikias, correct me if I'm wrong, if it was someone else. But there was a report out that the Wolves wanted Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo, and a protected 2019 first-round pick. So, Nikias, do your best Colin Coward. Who is Bam Adebayo? I've never heard of this player.
Oh, well, Bam Adebayo is one of the more intriguing center prospects in the league right now. He has some ball skills, the ability to grab a rebound, push it, kind of operate a fast break onto itself. He's a role threat. He does need to improve as a finisher a little bit, but he has a 7'3 wingspan, can jump out of the gym. He dunked on a lot of people last year. Very good screener, underrated passer. The upside with him is his defensive versatility. He is 6'9", has that 7'3 wingspan, can block shots, but also has very good feet. He can hang on the perimeter, switch on to guards, and hold his own. Few of the highlights he had last year included ISO possessions against Steph Curry where he couldn't get a shot off, LeBron James where he couldn't get any separation. He had Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns in the same game, ISO'd against them, they couldn't score. So that's just the kind of versatile player that he can be. He has room to grow, obviously. Didn't have a huge role last year, but if he improves on ball, become more of a scoring threat, then I think he has the chance to be special.
Yeah. I think Coward's whole point, I mean, I don't want to like give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think he's doing the whole, like, wait, Bam Adebayo is your sticking point here? Like, why is this, like, young non-star a sticking point for a star in Jimmy Butler, who is a top 15 player when healthy right now? And, like, from the Heat's perspective, I get it, because Josh Richardson and Bam, frankly, depending on how you feel about Justice Winslow, they're probably like the two highest upside players they have, at least in terms of like long-term upside.
Right.
So that leads me to my first serious question is like, if you're the Heat, what's the most you are willing to give up for Jimmy Butler right now? Like, do you think they should do that trade? I think they would still need a little bit of salary filler to go in with that. Mm-hmm. But like, would you give up Jay Rich, Bam, and a protected first for Jimmy Butler right now?
Absolutely not. That is way too much considering Minnesota's lack of leverage overall. The contract that Jimmy Butler is going to sign next summer. And as you mentioned, like Richardson and Adebayo both have upside. And Jimmy Butler right now is at worst a top, 14, 15 player? Mm-hmm. So not to kind of poo-poo on his ability, but there isn't much upside there for him. So I don't think you empty the cupboard to get Jimmy in that regard. And on top of that, with Miami's salary situation still being bad, they're going to need assets to clear more salary if they want to add a second star. But if you empty the clip just to get Jimmy, then they're going to be stuck with Jimmy and solid roster pieces, but what's the ceiling there? Maybe a fourth seed if things break right. So Miami has to be careful here.
So what would you, like, if you're Miami, what's the deal you would make for Jimmy Butler?
I would offer Hassan Whiteside. I'd be willing to throw in Justice. And if not a first, maybe Rodney Magruder, since he seems to be an intriguing 3-and-D piece. He has been balling in preseason for whatever stock you can put into that. But he is definitely a Teals player. He's hard-nosed. He's going to get in your jersey and defend. He can knock down spot-up threes. He has improved on ball a little bit, but obviously he's not a star. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of 3-and-D guy you can slide in the starting lineup alongside Jeff Teague and Andrew Wiggins, and he doesn't need the ball to be effective.
Can I play devil's advocate here for a second, even though I completely agree with Nikias? I just want to get this debate started on what everyone on Twitter has, because looking at the age on Miami's roster, like, obviously it's catered to having a superstar in his prime type of player, you know, i.e. Jimmy. So it makes, on some level, sense to trade the kids for him. I totally get where you're coming from, Nikias, and I agree. I'm just trying to paint it from the other side. Like, you locked up so many veterans. Was it a year and two years ago, where they just handed out virtually like 4-year contracts to everyone, or was that last year?
That was last year.
Last year, right? So basically, like, there is a cap in Miami, regardless, because just of the salary structure. So, but you need that one alpha. Like, that alpha is not there. And you look at, like, you've got Hassan, you've got, like, Kelly Olynyk, you've got Goran Dragic, like, James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, those guys. Like, it makes on some level, it makes sense to take Jimmy into that and give him a team that could be at least intriguing right away. But, and this is where I also get off the idea, like, where I just, like, oh, yeah, don't offer that for Jimmy. Like, what's the ceiling? Like, that's not a finals team. It's not. I love Jimmy to death, but yeah, okay, so you pair him with Hassan Whiteside. That's not a strong pick and roll. Like, yeah, you have Jimmy and Goran Dragic in the backcourt. That's all fine and dandy. That can produce some wins, but they'll definitely make the playoffs, but they'll get bounced by Toronto, by Philly, by Boston. I mean, right. Milwaukee. Like, I don't see the upside there. So that's why I agree initially, like, yeah, you've got to go for the young kids. But then I don't get, like, what they were trying to do 2 years ago. I still don't.
Yeah, that bringing the players back was never an issue for me, because I just didn't – I kind of expected Gordon Hayward to go to Boston.
Right.
But what always bothered me was handing out 4-year deals. And the Kelly Olynyk deal ended up being a smart one. But getting James Johnson for 4 years instead of two – or a 2+1 didn't make sense. Deion Waiters, when there have been multiple reports out that no one else was offering 1 year. So to give Deion 4 years never made a modicum of sense. And then the ankle injury has just kind of derailed any value that he had. So that has definitely thrown things off. So I guess I understand Miami wanting to get Jimmy because, A, he's really good. B, he raises their ceiling. But also, it at least gives you a sense of direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So...
wrong direction as well. I mean, that's just, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, from their perspective, it's like, you know, the hardest thing is to get one star, and then they can use Jimmy in theory next summer if they could somehow clear salary cap space or make another trade to bring in a second star. Like, as Nikias said, it gives them a direction. Like, their direction goes from purgatory to win now. Is that the right direction to go? I don't know, but, like, if you can still keep Justice around, you can still keep Richardson around, you can still keep Adebayo around, they still have a promising young core where they can, like, do a crappy version of what Boston did a couple years ago, where they're, like, towing the line between getting this young core and still competing right now.
Right,
Miami just can't do it as well because they have all of this big salary tied up, but... You know, after this season, most of those guys only have a year or two on their deals anyway. Like, Whiteside, I think after this year, only has the player option, right? So, right. Like, he could be off the books, you know, relatively soon if he bounces back. And let's go into Whiteside next. I think that's, you know, really the other big question. If they don't trade for Jimmy Butler, Hassan Whiteside is their big question mark, X factor, I don't know what to call him. Because, you know, we've seen his upside, like... when he's motivated, he is possibly the best shot blocker in the league. But we also saw the downside last year where, you know, he got frustrated with his role in the offense in particular. He became all but, you know, he was a gigantic liability in the playoffs against Philly because, you know, he just was lazy and, like, would not go out to guard these stretch fives. And then, like, not only did Embiid play him off before, but, like, Ersan Ilyasova played him off before, which is much more concerning than Embiid playing him off before. So, Nikias, I mean, there have been reports, you know, all summer that the Heat wanted to trade him, but Pat Riley was trying to kind of, like, bridge the gap between him and Eric Spoelstra and try to, like, make those guys get on the same page again. What are your expectations for Hassan Whiteside this season?
Well, again, you have to put the it's preseason qualifier out there.
Right.
But it's hard not to be at least a little bit excited for what Hassan can do this year just because he's looked so good and his numbers have been great. He's averaging like 15 and 12 in 25 minutes. He's barely missed anything. He's hit a three, which put my mentions in shambles again. But but no, just looking at him, he moves a lot better. You could tell on top of the effort issues that I've been pounding the drum on, he legitimately wasn't healthy last year. The knee hampered him a good deal. Mm-hmm. And for a guy as big as him, who already didn't have great lateral quickness, that just tanked it. And that was another reason why, even if he wanted to try to close out on Ersan Ilyasova at the three-point line, he couldn't because the knee was bothering him so bad. So it just kind of compounded the issue. But he's definitely moving better. He's still cleaning the glass on both ends. He's made a presence in the paint on both ends of the floor. He seems motivated and healthy, and that's really all you can ask for at this point. The screens have been better, and I've definitely been pounding the drum on that. So, you know, time will tell if those kind of things hold, but he's had a strong summer. He has put in the work. Spo has raved about him during training camp and during the summer about just how hard he's worked. The preseason has kind of showed the fruit there. So if he can keep that up, I think, you know, that doesn't put Miami in the class of like Philly or someone. Mm-hmm. But I do think their ceiling's going to be a little bit higher just because he can change the game on both ends of the floor when he's playing to his abilities.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing with Miami last year was, like, you have a bunch of, like, strong rotation players, but there was, you know, Goran Dragic made the all-star team, like, as a technicality almost. Like, they lacked that true all-star caliber talent. But, like, Hassan, when motivated and healthy, has that kind of upside. Right. Josh Richardson, you know, is just so young that, like, he's really freaking good. I think this is probably the year where people start to realize, like, outside of Miami and, like, hardcore NBA fans, just how good he is.
He's 25, though. You keep saying he's so young. Can we just, like, he's 25.
That's still
it's young. Just yeah.
entering his prime.
Right, but, like, he's not, like, some 20-year-old. I'm just, like, yeah. Let's put it into context, though. Right. Like, he's probably closer to being a... not quite finished, but the ceiling isn't as big.
Ask Andrew Wiggins how age and the ceiling goes.
Thank you.
I have nothing. I have nothing to counter with that. Yeah, that's true. Very true. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. Like, he is closer to his ceiling than a Brandon Ingram or something. But, like, at a certain point, when the trajectory has been going only up, like, I think it's still reasonable to project more improvement.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, than a guy like Wiggins, who we've now seen for 4 years, has just been the same player.
I am so sad we're not talking about the Timberwolves right now. By the way, because I saw a great tweet today. Like, if you've been hammered all summer long by by the media, by Jimmy, like, and your motor have been questioned for like a year and a half. This is what you go out and do in preseason.
I know. It's so bad.
He was terrible last night.
Yeah.
I'm writing a piece right now for FanSided about like the 10 players who have the most improved this year. Andrew Wiggins is number two on my list.
It should be number one. I don't care who you have at number
one. He should be one through five.
Markel. Markel is number one.
No.
Markel. No. Like, I mean. Yeah.
Swap the spots, Brian. You got to swap the spots.
All right. I'm open to it. Another guy who I actually considered for the list, but then, like, there were just too many good options. But Justice Winslow, you know, last year we actually started to see some, like, point justice, which I thought was really interesting and kind of, like, unlocked some upside for him that I don't think we necessarily saw in those first 2 years. Like, again, going back to the Philly series, like, he played Markel off the floor last year. Like, Markel had no chance when he was running the second unit offense. So, Mort, what are your expectations for him this year? He's entering a contract year. I think just based on know, the way the Heat's books are structured, like it's going to be hard to sign him to an extension. They'll probably just let him test free agency next summer unless he agrees to a really team-friendly deal. So, you know,
Are you saying they
contract
won't
year.
sign him to 4 years?
Well, we'll see next summer. But
I
what do you see out of him this year?
don't think he looks at that contract at all. He knows Miami is just handing out 4-year deals right and left, so I think he's fine. I honestly, I have a feeling that just is looking at his first 3 years going, God, what a waste. What a waste. I can do so much better. And I think he tapped into that mentality a little bit last year, and I hope this year is where he really rolls it out. So coming in, like we were all looking at Justice becoming as a higher level scorer than he turned out to be, but that isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I think a lot of people are still stuck on that, you know, train of thought. Like, oh, he's not a 17-point scorer. That means he's sort of a bust. No. He's still a solid rebounder. He's improving as a playmaker. What it feels like, you know, from a game-to-game perspective, really. The defensive upside is there. He seems to have a very high understanding of the game of basketball, generally speaking. So what he needs to figure out is when can I apply myself in the right situations offensively? Because, you know, at this current time, offense is still like the biggest weakness he has. So if he just closes that gap somewhat, that's just going to take him like so far ahead of the curve than he has been over the first 3 years. So that's what I'm looking for. Just a little bit more consistency on offense, and then just keep developing in the way he has in the other facets of the game.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Josh Richardson, you know, like being close to his ceiling just because of his age. Like, Justice is only 22.
22,
I mean,
yeah.
yeah, like there's still a lot of room to grow. And I think it just goes back to like the depth or the amount of rotation players Miami has. Like, they go legit 10, 11, 12 deep, where he's not going to put up monster stats just because there are so many mouths to feed in that offense. But like, I think it's reasonable to still be high on Justice. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if in these Jimmy Butler talks, his name pops up at some point too,
Oh,
because
yeah.
like that's the type of player you should be going after if you're Minnesota, especially
Yes.
just given his age and then like the age of Townsend Wiggins. Like, he's on that same developmental age curve as those guys are.
Yeah. Okay, just honestly, if you swap Wiggins for Winslow, just hypothetically, like, how much better does Minnesota become? And I'm not even trying to, I'm not even trying to make a joke here, but just like, just from a facilitating standpoint, like from a defensive standpoint, like he doesn't have come in with this idea that, oh, I have to take like 17, 19 shots a game. And like, he just comes in with this very team first attitude. He would fit so well in with Towns. Like, he would get Tyus Jones going. Like, he would come in and just fit seamlessly in with that type of group. That could be fun. So, I still think Minnesota's trying to trade the wrong guy, but I know, you know, Jimmy demanded a trade, so
Well,
yeah.
I think Minnesota would happily trade Wiggins too. I
Yeah.
just don't think anyone wants him.
I would agree, but I love that idea of having a guy like Winslow. Not, and I think when you think of Winslow, you also think like, how good could he be on other teams that have like these superstar players? You kind of feel a little bit that he's wasting his time in Miami because there isn't that one guy that he can kind of feed off and develop from. But at the same time, it should also present him with an opportunity to take all the spotlight at some point.
That's true. Before we move on, last question about Miami. We already kind of hinted at this earlier, you know, just talking about their ceiling. But Nekias, let's assume they don't make the Jimmy Butler deal. What do you think the ceiling for this team is this year?
It's going to depend on health. Miami dealt with a lot of health stuff last year. And that's kind of where having 10, 11 good rotation players help them, because you can still kind of keep the train on the tracks there. You can just plug and play. But just looking at them, I kind of slot them in that 6 to 8 range, probably closer to 6. You know, Boston's going to be at the top. Toronto's going to be at the top fighting with Boston. Philly should be there. Okay, Milwaukee played Chicago in the preseason game. And it's preseason and it's Chicago and we're not expecting them to defend. But that offense looked so modernized. And they produced so many corner threes and Giannis was so efficient. People should be scared of Milwaukee this year, just from a schematic standpoint.
I love Milwaukee in that game, man. I was just blown away. They were so good. They were so good.
It's almost like we've been saying for months that
it
upgrading
is.
To Bud was a massive, like,
oh boy,
it just
I
blew
wish
under the
we
radar.
Had, Brian. I wish we had been harping on the Bucks since June or early June. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I saw a tweet yesterday from like Sports Illustrated naming the Bucks and the Nuggets as surprise teams. I'm like, who's surprised by either of these teams?
Yeah.
Anyone paying attention would know. So I guess the toss-up there with Miami, you would say between them and Washington, and that's really going to depend on, I mean, we'll get into it, but that's going to depend on the locker room mostly.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I do think Miami's firmly going to be in like that 5-6-7 range, and then from there it's just going to depend on who they match up with in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Like, I would not be excited to see Miami in the playoffs again. Like, I know the Sixers won that series in 5, but like, that was a hard-fought series. I think Miami, again, like, that depth really gives them a floor that I don't think a team like Washington has. Like, if John Wall or Bradley Beal goes down, that's probably all she wrote for Washington getting out of the first round. Or, like, if Victor Oladipo goes down, that's it for Indiana, most likely. But, like, Washington, if you lose Goran Dragic or if you lose Josh Richardson, like, you can plug and play, as you said, where, you know, hopefully everyone stays healthy, of course, but... Yeah, I mean, I think they should be comfortably penciled in as a playoff team. And I think, as you said, somewhere like 6-7 is probably right in line with that.
Is that with the expectation that Dwayne Ellington is going to repeat what he did last year?
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to imagine him keeping it up. But also, once you take that many high pressure shots and you maintain your efficiency with that kind of volume, it's also hard to see a dip.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not doubting Ellington per se. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, we could be looking at a 1 year spike where he would just return to, I don't want to say normal, because he was a better shooter. He's always been a better shooter than his earlier stats indicated. Like, he just didn't get the right looks in Miami. He really found his role, and I think he's still going to be like insanely good. I just have that. I have a slight concern in the back of my head that he's not going to maintain the same kind of volume and the same efficiency, just a little bit. Not saying he's going to dip down to like being a 32% shooter at all, but like maybe just take a small dip. I hope not. I hope he proves me wrong and he increases, because God, I love him as a player. He's so much fun to watch.
He is fun to watch. No shot is not open enough for Wayne Ellington.
Oh, man.
It does not matter who's guarding him. Coming off of screens, spot up opportunities. It just does not matter. The pump and sidestep, he has all that in his bag.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, guys, let's move on to the only Washington institution with potentially worse chemistry than the United States. Washington Wizards. I think that's really the question with Washington this year, right? Like, cannot blow up internally and like force everyone to get traded by the trade deadline. We have to start with Dwight Howard, who they acquired for nothing. I mean, they signed him for the taxpayer mid-level exception after trading away Marcin Gortat. You know, Gortat and John Wall, I'd say by the end of the season, like, it was an open secret how much they hated each other.
Was it even a secret?
Yeah, no, just like, yeah, openly out there how much they hated each other. But that said, now you're bringing in Dwight Howard, who has worn out his welcome at each of his last three teams very quickly. I mean, Atlanta salary dumped him. Charlotte dumped him for Timofey Mozgov. Like, you hit rock bottom in your NBA career when you get salary dumped for Timofey Mozgov. And then the Nets were like, no, we don't want you. Absolutely not. Go away. Like, we just wanted to get rid of that contract. We have no interest in keeping you. So... I mean, like, in terms of on court, I mean, he put up decent numbers last year. Like, in theory, he should be an upgrade over what Gortat brought, right? Mm-hmm. But do you guys have any faith in this thing actually, like, lasting the whole year harmoniously?
God, I mean, I think it is kind of feasible simply because, you know, he's bounced around so much now that I cannot imagine any human being not at some point looking himself in the mirror going, hey, maybe it's me.
Yeah, right.
Then again, it is Dwight Howard, so yeah. Maybe so. I'm hoping for his sake that he finally finds a home, though. I would like a little bit more Dwight Howard stability, because you know, we make fun of the guy as a person, and I understand that. But his game has been scrutinized to a point where I feel he's become underrated as a basketball player, not as a you know, as a person and or as a locker room presence, whatnot. Like solely as a basketball player, he's like, they got to steal with that contract. He's he's going to give you like 14 and 12, couple blocks and great efficiency around the rim, like for what, 5.5 mil. Like, however you slice it, even if, oh yeah, it's not new age basketball, that's great fucking value. Great fucking value. It's just a matter of, can he coexist with others? And, you know, him accepting a deal in that scale, I think Hope could, like, make him more applicable to go, hey, you know what? I have realized that I'm not this $25 million player anymore. I will take a back seat.
Yeah, I mean, the question, right, that's the question, is like, is he going to continue demanding post-ups, or is he going to realize as a 32-year-old that, like, your identity, especially with John Wall, is he 33?
He's from 85.
Wow. I don't know, he's still 32, though, right? He doesn't turn 33 till December.
Oh, well, then he has all the time in the world. A-plus potential.
Plenty of ceiling left. But, it, like, you know, he can realize, like, I have a great pick and roll partner in John Wall. That's all I should do on offense. Just run a million pick and rolls, clean up on offensive glass, get some putbacks, easy dunks, that kind of stuff. Like, post up is not, like, we should not be running that many of these plays for me. It's not efficient.
Yeah.
It's
just screw not gonna... that I played with Steve Nash. Doesn't matter. Like, doesn't matter. John Wall is my pick and roll partner. This is when I'm going to accept that I'm a pick and roll partner. Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, when he played with Steve Nash, he was 27. Now he's 32. Like, these last 5 years, as you said, should have been very humbling for him.
Yeah.
But, it's, you know, that's the question. Were they? Guys, do you have any thoughts on Dwight?
Like, one would hope that he finally gets it. I mean, he, as you said, he's going to give you 14, 12. Easy, like. I mean, he's still a physical specimen down low. He still can protect the rim. He's still a very good role man when he actually wants to screen. But then you get to your point, like, he had, I'm looking at Synergy now, over 200 more post-ups than pick and roll possessions last year. And he's playing with Kemba. It just doesn't make sense. I do think he's a better player than Marching Gortat, and he should definitely help the defense more than Gortat did. I am a little bit concerned about the offensive fit, because if Gortat could do nothing else, he's going to set great screens. And I feel like the relationship with Wall, I think he kind of took some of that anger out on the people that he was screening. But he's at worst like a top three screener in the league. Yeah. And Dwight can be that guy, but he hasn't been.
Right.
And, you know, John Wall is going to be a guy that's going to let him know, hey, you need to set this screen. So I'm just kind of curious to see how receptive he's going to be to that, or if he just kind of bites the bullet and screens hard and rolls hard on his own. And if he does, I think that definitely takes Washington to another level, because they have top-tier talent. I mean, Otto Porter is really good. Bradley Beal is really good. John Wall is obviously really good. Dwight Howard, at least from a production standpoint, is still a top 10, 12 center. Their starting lineup was really good last year with Gortat. You know, in theory, you add Dwight Howard, who has more pop offensively and is a better defensive player, he should improve them. But it's really going to boil down to Dwight accepting his role.
Right. And we've talked about that in previous episodes or previous previews with, like, it's the same thing with, like, Dennis Schroeder in OKC, Carmelo in Houston now. It's like, these guys have gone through these humbling experiences. If you accept your role, you could be major difference makers. If you don't, you're going to be malcontents, and you could threaten the structural integrity of your entire team. And Dwight Howard is another one of those guys on my list of people who need to prove themselves, mostly because he got salary dumped for Timofey Mozgov. But while I was researching for that piece, I did find something. Speaking of the screening, Nikias, was someone from the Charlotte Observer said, like, a team source just said, like, Howard's screens are terrible, and he just wouldn't run plays. Like, he would go freelance on plays, and that's why they wanted him out so much. So
Go for it.
I was just gonna say, I think he's, like, the big storyline with Washington this year is, like, can he get back to I don't think he's going to go back to like 8-time All-Star Dwight Howard and like 3-time Defensive Player of the Year Dwight Howard. But, you know, can you get back from I got a salary dumped for Timofey Mozgov and, you know, be a productive player? Well, time will tell.
So I've read, you know, two of Shaq's books, you know, Shaq Talks Back and what the hell was the Shaq Uncut or something like that. I don't know what it's called. And in one of those books, Shaq actually talked about setting screens. Like he would just brush off screens. Like, I don't want screens. Just I'm going to go down low and I'm just going to demand the basketball. Like, he had a guard like call him out, like, come set a screen. And he's just like, nope, not going to do that. I'm Shaq. I don't do that stuff. And now think about the way that Dwight was treated in Orlando with, hey, you're Shaq 2.0, right? With all that hype. So how many years did he spend in Orlando? Like 7, 8, something like that?
Yeah.
All right. I think 8. 8, yeah. Like, he has 8 years maybe of that mentality going through him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Nekai, you know, totally. Like, he could be that screen setter as Marcin Gortat. Like, he just has to understand it. He has to sacrifice himself a little bit more. You know, this idea that, hey, I'm going to go down the low block, it's outdated. And I will give him credit for this. He was on, I think, he had an interview with, was it NBC Washington, something like that, you know, one of the sports channels, where he was like, I'm going to shoot threes this year. I'm going to be taking threes this year because I have to extend my career, and I understand that's a necessary component to actually extend it. So that at least intrigues me somewhat. I don't think he's going to have like a Marc Gasol Renaissance 3-point affair by any stretch of the imagination. But if he could go out there and just on occasion hit a few, that could change games a little bit.
Yeah, it definitely could. The other two additions they made this summer, I feel like they were kind of like low-key the Lakers of the East. Like, we roundly made fun of the Lakers for adding everyone aside from LeBron James that they did. And then the Wizards also got roundly made fun of because they add Dwight Howard. They also traded Gortat for Austin Rivers and bring in Jeff Green, who was like, you know, by all accounts, a great guy, but just a very frustratingly inconsistent player. Right. What do you think those guys bring to the table for Washington? Because, you know, the Wizards bench for the last couple of years has been just a toxic train wreck of awful. Like, in theory, those guys should be an upgrade. But do you have faith that they actually will be?
I have faith in Austin Rivers. I feel like Austin Rivers is a guy that has gotten a lot more crap than he's deserved over the last 2 or 3 years just because of the Doc element. Mm-hmm. But he has legitimately developed into a solid two-way shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that can knock down spot-up threes, can knock down some off the dribble. He can operate a pick-and-roll. He's a good on-ball defender. If nothing else, I have faith in him kind of solidifying that second unit. Washington already kind of staggered Bill and Wall a lot when they were both healthy just to kind of keep somebody on the floor that can run the offense. So I think having Austin Rivers alongside either one of those two is going to have the offense above water. Jeff Green is just kind of meh. He was good last night, so I can't talk too much trash about him.
Yeah.
But I just don't know. Jeff, he's a body. He's going to have a good 2-week stretch. You just kind of have to hope it's going to be in the playoffs and not in January. But I don't know. Like, Austin Rivers is the only guy I really have faith in on that bench. So he's really going to depend on just how much of an impact he can have.
But, you know, look at last season, and really their only two dependable reserves were Kelly Oubre and Tomas Satoransky. So, like, just having another body in Austin Rivers, who is a quality NBA player, like, I think, who was their backup point guard last year? Like, Ramon Sessions? And Tim Frazier?
Like, I do like Tim Frazier, but...
Yeah, but, like... You
know, when you're relying on Tim Frazier.
Right. Austin Rivers is a clear upgrade over those guys. So, yeah, I mean, I think that will be... It's going to give them a boost.
How come none of y'all have talked about the next Iggy on this roster?
Are you going to say Troy Brown, who's not going to
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I'm talking about Troy Brown Jr.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I am.
Moritz's big into players who aren't going to play. Like, he's very into Anthony Simons, who is just not going to play a single minute this year. Yeah. Big on Anthony Simons.
I am. If I identify a rookie I like, I'm going to stand for him until he proves me wrong. Look,
I respect that.
Yeah, Troy Brown Jr. is going to be better than Jeff Green by the All-Star break.
That is a very high bar to clear.
That is not a hard bar, but you know, the perception is reality in this league, and yeah. that's just the way it's played. But he is going to be a guy moving forward that people are going to talk about. And I've noticed that in previews and when people talk about Washington, like, he's rarely mentioned at all. This dude can play. It's just a matter of giving him minutes. And you need that guy who can tie together an offense and a defense and also can tie together rotations. Like, I have a feeling that guy is going to be one of John Wall's boys because he's going to, you know, put in the work. I'm very excited about Troy Brown Jr. Like, if we did the top five over Washington storylines, Dwight Howard would be lower on my list than Troy Brown.
But do you think he gets minutes? Do you think Scotty Brooks is creative enough to give him minutes?
Oh, I want to say yes so bad, but I can't. I can't. The thing is, though, you know what would be fun? To actually give Troy Brown Jr. those backup, you know, point guard minutes. I think that could be hella fun. He can handle the ball. He can initiate the offense.
Yeah, because Rivers could play the either
two. Yeah, he position, can. Really. Yeah, I prefer Rivers, though, at the two. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. We also need to talk. We got to have some real talk about John Wall. Because, you know, you were talking earlier about, like, Dwight Howard needs to look in the mirror and realize, you know, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
John Wall might need to look in the mirror and have that same conversation. I know Zach Lowe has been harping on this about how he was, like, one of the slowest players in the league, or in terms of, like, you know, when he's going to the rim, he's, you know, had ridiculous speed as he always had. But otherwise, he kind of just stands around and, like, loafs around the court a lot, which is not great. You know, the gripes with Gortat were one thing, but, like, there was that thing a couple years ago with him and Beal where he's like, yeah, we don't really like each other on the court that much. Like, you know, John Wall needs to be their on-court leader. He's their highest-paid player. He's got right. that supermax kicking in next year. He had a, you know, if you look at his box score from last year, he had still, like, 19 points, almost 10 assists a game. Like, yeah. It looks good, but it was a definite downgrade from the year prior.
Oh, yeah.
He missed 41 games with some knee issues. Are you concerned at all about John Wall moving forward? Do you think he can be the leader that the Wizards need him to be?
First of all, let me just say that if John Wall doesn't want to look himself in the mirror after that picture being taken at Team USA, I can kind of understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be fair. Yeah. Look, John is very volatile, isn't he? I mean, you know, if things doesn't really move his way, he's just gotta... I don't want to say quit because he doesn't... I never look at him as a quitter, but he does, like, disengage himself a little bit. Like, then it doesn't really matter. Like, he's going to blow it out of proportion. He needs to grow up, honestly. There's no other way to really put it. And in terms of being the leader, you know, you have these alphas who, on occasion, just aren't great leaders. Like, they're great players. They can lead you, yeah, lead you, statistically, to a championship, but they might not be, you know, the heart of the team. I'm looking at a guy like Kevin Durant, like, and it's not meant in a negative sense. Some guys just aren't these, you know, naturally vocal leaders. KD was never that guy. He led by example. He still does. And I think Wall, to some extent, is like that, but he wants to be more like, he wants to be the traditional communicative leader, and he just isn't. Like, he's not breaking through that barrier. People are like, yeah, okay, John, yeah, shut up. I'm not going to listen to you. Right. So I think what he needs to do is just go in a different route and say, all right, fine. You know what? I'm going to let Bradley take care of you know, the traditional leadership qualities because he's a better communicator. And I'm just going to go out there and ball my ass off. I'm going to go out there and drop 25 and 10 with five boards and two steals and a block a game. And I'm going to help my team in the best way that I can by using my talent. Because here's the thing, and I've been saying this for a while. From a talent standpoint, John Wall could be a top five player. He is that good. He is that insanely good. He showed that last season, like 23 and 11 with two steals. He was amazing. He was just ridiculous. It's just a matter of realizing, how do I utilize my game to the best of my team's abilities?
Yeah. I agree with that. And that, Nikai, so that leads into my last question about the Wizards is, you know, you mentioned them kind of in that 6-7 range with the Heat. Do you think there's a scenario in which they surprise us all and they turn into like a surprise dark horse for a top four seed in the East?
Yeah, I'm sure that would be a Black Mirror episode in season four that they can legit grab the third seed. I mean, Boston and Toronto are kind of top tier, Philly not far behind them at all. But if Philly does suffer like a little bit of a dip while they're trying to integrate Markelle Fultz into the lineup, or if they have injury concerns with Fultz or Embiid, like Washington, again, they have upper end talent. That's kind of why they always play better in the playoffs than in the regular season, because the starters play more. They, to their credit, they step up their intensity, and they all, no matter what the seed is, they always end up posing more of a problem because their guys come to play. So they have it in them to be like a top three seed, but it's, I don't know, it's accountability, it's consistency. Not so much the bench this year. I think the bench is going to be better, but they just have so many question marks that it's hard to be confident in them. And they talk so much. They talk so much. You don't even want to believe in them at this point just because they've said so much. I think it was Markieff Morris just a week or so ago saying, Boston's never been better than us. I'm just like, they've sent you home packing. I don't know why. Even if you believe that, and I can get that from a competitive standpoint, don't say it. You're giving more bulletin board material to other teams, and you're putting yourself out there when you haven't proven anything. So, I mean, I would love for Washington to just put their head down and ball out because the talent is there. But I mean, they have to put in the work. They have to prove that.
Yeah, like, didn't they spend all of the training camp saying no more talking, and then they've already started talking again?
Markieff Morris gets the tech in a preseason game. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. And if you have to say no more talking multiple times, like,
Not a great sign. So yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Wizards, like, I think you phrased it well. There is a Black Mirror episode in which they do coalesce and come together, but we're assigning probabilities here, not high on the list.
That's a 100K tweet right there. Just pointing that out.
it really is. All right, let's move into the Charlotte Hornets,
Oh,
who,
do we have to?
see, the rest of this division is just so shitty. Like, there's a reason we saved this one for the last, because it's just like,
Yeah,
it's hard to get excited about any of these teams.
can we just talk about Miles Bridges for the entirety of the Charlotte Hornets?
I mean, that's one of the positive storylines for this team, because there's really not much else going for him. So yeah, go ahead, sing Miles Bridges' praises.
No, he's NBA ready. I mean, look, I don't care about preseason. I mean, he had a fine debut, I want to say. God, he threw down some nice dunks. But he seems very confident. And, 2 years of college, again, I'm not the biggest proponent of the NCAA, you know this. But 2 years of college didn't prepare him. I think he's coming in with this chip on his shoulder that he didn't get drafted higher because he stayed at Michigan State with that, goal in mind. Like, he returned to see an increase in his draft stock, and he was not drafted as high as he was hoping to. And he seems to be really digging into that right now. And I think that chip is going to carry on throughout the rest of the season. Like, that team is going nowhere, but I have a feeling that he's going to be one of those guys that you kind of tune into League Pass once in a while to just catch up. He's going to be on ESPN. He's going to be all on the top 10 list once in a while. But not necessarily just for his dunks. He's an active defender. Like, he's going to get the highlight blocks. He's going to get some really impressive steals as well, where he just picks someone's pocket. Like, I love his versatility. He's a great rebounder. He can push the ball in transition. His playmaking is really good. Like, he's like a good at everything. He's just not a master of anything yet. But I think that can come in time. Like, he's going to be above average in so many categories. That when we see a Miles Bridges age 23, 24, oh boy.
Well, he's already 22, right?
I thought he was 21.
Oh no, he's only 20. Yeah, no, he's 20. Just
Oh,
kidding,
he's
just
21. Oh, nice. Even
he's
better.
only 20. Yeah, false
Oh,
alarm, false alarm.
yeah. All right.
I can't do math. But yeah, I mean, they don't
That's
need
why you
him
married
to
a
be.
doctor. She can do math for you, Brian.
She ironically cannot. She's even worse. I'm actually very good at simple math. That was just a total brain fart.
We need 50 cc stats, huh?
Yeah, no, I know. So, that, yeah. Luckily, they don't need him to be an all-star right away. Like the if he is that kind of glue guy, I feel like that's the role they wanted Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to fill, but he just never quite developed offensively. But like they have guys like Kemba and Jeremy Lamb and Nick Batum to really shoulder the offensive load. And then defensively, that's kind of, we were talking about Dwight Howard, Nikias. Is it this is gonna sound mean to say, but is losing Dwight Howard gonna be addition by subtraction for the Hornets this year?
I think overall, yes, just because Cody Zeller, he may not be a better player, but he is certainly a better fit for what they want to do. He sets screens, he rolls hard, he cleans the offensive glass, he's a good positional defender. And, new head coach James Borrego, he wants to play fast, and that fits what Cody Zeller wants to do. Charlotte's already at a pace of, I think, 109 this preseason. They have really emphasized moving fast. I think I read about a week or so ago that during training camp they practice with like a 12-second shot clock, just to kind of get drill just to drill those guys that, hey, we're going to move fast, we're going to get into our actions quick, and we're going to move. And Charlotte has done that, so I think Zeller's definitely going to help them more in that regard. I'm ready to see healthy Zeller. He looks like he's had a little bit more of a green light offensively through the first few games. Obviously, it's preseason, but just trying to catch some trends out of there. Charlotte's playing faster, and Cody Zeller already looks like he's fitting right in.
And I think, they've got Willy Hernangómez, who is a good, he'll be like a totally adequate backup. Frank Kaminsky's there too. He can kind of fill the role that Zeller does offensively off the bench. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds mean, but I agree that, like, there's a non-zero chance that, as you said, like, Dwight Howard is a better player overall, but, like, sometimes if you've got a Dwight Howard who's a better player, but he doesn't fill the role he's asked to play, and you've got Cody Zeller who is a role player, but he accepts being a role player, that's
Precisely.
an upgrade. Like, that's how basketball works. It can't all be all-stars. We're talking about Washington, Miami being in that 6-7 range. I feel like, assuming Washington doesn't completely implode, we could more or less safely pencil them in to one of those spots. And Miami, I think, is a safe playoff team too.
Right.
So it feels like the 8 seed comes down to Detroit versus Charlotte. I mean, depending on if you feel like Cleveland is going to be a potential playoff team, I think the Bulls are, now that Markkanen's out for a while, that probably ends any sleeper playoff
Oh,
buzz they
yeah,
were going to get.
I've already coined a phrase for the Chicago season. Baron for Barrett.
Again, it's Detroit versus Charlotte. Do you think Charlotte has a realistic chance to make the playoffs this year?
Just based on, a lack of candidates and the fact that
Right.
Kemba Walker is still amazing, I can't rule them out entirely, but I don't anticipate seeing them play in late April. I'll say as much. It really depends on how this team kind of functions. Like if the coaching change is going to have a drastic impact, and if the lack of Dwight just creates a more heavy ball movement in the offense, and they take teams by surprise. Because look, teams are going to come in and think, oh, this is a W right here, and if they can just take like 5 or 6 of those games, that's going to swing them up significantly. So
It's true.
I can't rule it out. Kemba will need to, stay healthy first and foremost, which shouldn't be an issue. And he'll have to lay down like 25 a game, but he has that capability. So,
I mean, they benefit from being in a crappy division, like the 4 games against Orlando and the 4 games against Atlanta. If you don't go at least 3-1 in each of those, you don't deserve to make the playoffs anyway.
No, they need to look at 8-0 for those. They really do. And they need to pound on the teams like Chicago and New York. I mean, if they come in, it has to be because they're just beating up, the lesser half of the Eastern Conference.
Totally agree. Nekias Wirt and I have talked in at length about kind of Kemba Walker's future with the team. And, both of us kind of thought like this summer would have made sense to trade him, even last trade deadline, because we just didn't really see a way in which he re-signs next summer. That said, he has come out and said he wants to. I mean, he would not be the first player to say that and then leave anyway. CC Kevin Durant.
Definitely.
So what do you do if you're Charlotte? He's coming up on free agency. He's been vastly underpaid. He's going to be, now that Kyrie Irving says he's sticking with Boston, I mean, Kemba is probably the best free agent point guard on the market. Mm-hmm. If you're Charlotte and you, I mean, if you, I think if you fall out of the playoff race completely, you have to trade him. But even if you don't, like, say you're in that mix for the eight seed, how do you balance that with, you know, we could lose Kemba for nothing in July?
Well, just to just kind of touch on Kemba's free agency, being basically 30 minutes outside of Charlotte, kind of being around the area, Kemba absolutely wants to stay in Charlotte. I do not think he's blowing smoke on that at all. And Charlotte very much wants to keep him. Now, mm-hmm. if you're asking me if Charlotte should trade him, absolutely. Yeah. Kemba should have been gone a year ago.
Yeah.
I don't think there is any debate. Charlotte needs to get rid of Kemba, if for no other reason than to send him to a consistent playoff team, because he deserves that much.
Right.
But it's in terms of his actual interest, I do not doubt at all that Charlotte is going to throw like a 5-year deal at Kemba on July 1st.
Wow. Interesting. But,
he loves the area. He does a lot of community outreach in this area. But yeah, Charlotte absolutely should be looking to move him, because they can fight for eight. I think what really hurt them, they've always been a pretty decent team in terms of net rating. They have completely plummeted during clutch play. When they made the playoffs in 15-16, they were fifth in clutch net rating. They have been 17th and 19th the last 2 years, and they still ended up with like a positive net overall, which is why it's just been weird that they fall so far under 500 but still produce like a borderline playoff team. Mm-hmm. But so I guess if you're looking at health, if they play better during fourth quarters, there's a realistic chance of them getting to eight. But I don't think Charlotte should try to cap themselves. They need to move Kemba now, really embrace a youth movement to get a better duration going.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize he was that serious about staying in Charlotte. Like, that would influence the direction, I guess, they take. Like, I don't think they trade him. I think they should, but I don't think they do. I think if they were going to, they would have done it already.
Yeah, they wanted an all-star return. Wasn't that what Mike said?
Yeah.
So just a question for you guys, because I was talking about, you know, Kemba with one of my friends the other day, and he was like, is Kemba the best, you know, the best player, if you go like from organization to organization, is he like the best Hornet? Like, is he the leading guy for like the Hornets from a franchise perspective? Like, if you look at the totality of the Charlotte Hornets, is he the best player, the best Hornet of all time? I was like, my initial reaction was like, no, you know, Sos got him beat, LJ, right, like that. And then it just dawned on me, like, their tenures were pretty damn brief.
Yeah. Mm. If I'm not mistaken, Kemba became their franchise-leading scorer last year.
Right.
So I would probably lean towards Kemba in that regard, actually.
Yeah, and if so, like, obviously, I think, you know, the community in Charlotte, like, they're trying to build something stable. I could mm-hmm. see them just kind of going with that route, thinking, okay, this might be the best Hornet we've had here ever. Losing him would be just totally critical for our business plan. Like, mm-hmm. let's get him locked up, and then if we suck, we suck. But if we lock him up for, like, 4 years, 5 years maybe, you know, he'll maybe retire as in a different jersey, but he can look back and say, hey, Kemba Walker, now we have an asset. Like, we can have a Kemba Walker night when he's retired. Whatever. Like,
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like, Zoe was the first one who came to mind, but you're right. He only lasted there a couple of years. And, like, Larry Johnson, I guess?
But yeah, those two. But, like, yeah, I mean, they weren't there for so long. It was an interesting question because, you know, like you, or like both of you, I've been having the same thought. Like, yeah, of course they should trade him. Like, you know, move forward, yada, yada, yada. But then, you know, my friend asked me that question. I was like, huh, I wonder if that changes their perspective of wanting to move him. Because if he is, that's a hard sell on people. Like, they get real loyal down there.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Nick, guys.
I was agreeing with Moore. Absolutely. Yeah. Again, Charlotte loves him and he loves Charlotte.
Right.
So that's why I don't expect Charlotte to move him, but they absolutely should do so if you're just looking from a purely, you know, 3-4 year ahead type standpoint. Mm.
Yeah. It comes back to like what each franchise defines as success. Like, because not every franchise is in championship or bust mentality. And I think Charlotte in particular knows, like, we're in no position to win a championship. We're not going to be for a while. Like, maybe 45 win season in a playoff spot is a success for them, in which case they should keep Kemba as long as they can, because he could provide that. Like, that's the ceiling, but if they're happy with that ceiling, then by all means.
Right. Particularly this year, because Charlotte's going to have the All-Star game. So it would kind of behoove them to kind of keep Kemba there as kind of like a host star.
Yeah. Yeah.
All That's right. So we're breaking it right now, right? Kemba Walker resigns with Charlotte. Yeah.
On a 5-year max
deal. On a 5-year max deal. Yeah. All right. Ooh, lock it in. Do it. Lock it in.
Yikes. Yikes. Godspeed, Charlotte. Okay. Let's move on to the Atlanta Hawks. And we're gonna play a game. It's called Talk About Trae Young Without Mentioning Luka Doncic.
Well, you just did.
No, that's it. That's the only Luka mention we get.
You just did it again.
So neither of you could actually succeed at this game.
Oh, you know the answer to my. I mean, come on, I can't.
Right.
No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's going to be the whole storyline with Trae, of course. And that sucks because, like, Trae Young, you know, even if he's not as good as Luka Doncic, he could still be a really good player. And, like, you also get the top five protected pick next year. It's going to be years and years before we know who, like, won or lost that trade. There's a chance that both teams actually won. But what are your expectations more for Trae Young this year?
Oh, you know, I think he's going to struggle with his shooting percentages. And I think that's going to be the main narrative. And I think it's going to be totally unfair. Mm-hmm. You know, people look at him for some reason as he's, you know, as a senior coming out of college because of that stat line. You know, that was always unfair to him. He was a freshman. He's extremely young. He's very raw in some respects. I mean, look, he's got obviously not in the shooting department or playmaking department, but in other areas of the game, he's just not that physically ready. He's not. I can't comment on, you know, if he's mentally ready yet or what, but I could just see him rushing shots, you know, trying to get into that shooting rhythm a little bit more, like just trying to gauge NBA defenses in a general sense, like, all right, where can I get my shot? You know, this guy's going under the screen, so where do I pull up from exactly? Do I take one more dribble to really create further separation? Do I just pull up right now? Like, I think he's going to have a lot of those thoughts that's going to produce, you know, maybe a 32% from downtown, you know, percentage or something, and people are going to be, oh, he's not that, you know, he's not that great of a knockdown shooter as coming into the league, which I don't think is fair. It depends entirely on the offense, and Atlanta is going to be horrible on top of that. So I expect, you know, Trae to be scrutinized a little bit, which is, again, very unfair. What I hope from him is just that he finds a way to just mute that whole conversation and just focus on his development and focus on, you know, polishing his playmaking skills, because they're there. He just needs to find a way to speed it up to NBA speed.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that, then he's on a right path. I think he's on the right path regardless. He's going to be good. It's just a matter of time.
Right. I think, you know, he's being surrounded by what would probably be considered like a lack of a lot of like really good NBA talent is not going to help him. Like, teams are just going to be able to send double teams at him, especially if they realize he's going to be the point of attack every night. Which leads to my next question to Kaius is, you know, Atlanta, like, they're very much at the beginning stages of a rebuild, but they do have some promising young pieces in Trae Young. They have Taurean Prince, who really came on toward the end of last year. They also have John Collins, who, you know, I'd say vastly exceeded expectations as a rookie, looking like one of the steals of the last year's draft class already. Who do you think is Atlanta's best player moving forward?
Best player moving forward, I think, is going to be Trae, just because I do believe in the shooting and I definitely believe in the playmaking. Mm-hmm. I think he was the second best passer in this year's draft class. And I think...
Don't mention number one.
Not at all. But I do think them playing with more space, and when Atlanta eventually adds more talent, I think that's going to make Trae look a lot better. The best player of the three right now, I would probably lean Taurean Prince, just because I don't know how much of a rep Taurean Prince has, just because he hasn't played in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But he's not as good defensively as his profile would kind of lend you to believe, but he is still fine on that end. He's a good slasher, and the three-point shooting on the volume that he had last year is really encouraging. Mm-hmm. So I think there's definitely room for him to become one of the better small forwards in the league. Shot 41% from three on nearly 8 attempts after the All-Star break last year, which is absurd considering the talent around him. I love Taurean Prince. I'm still kind of hesitant on John Collins just because he has the athleticism to switch out. He's also very thin, and he's never really profiled as a great rim protector, so I think his best position will probably be at the five, but if he, I just need to see more development on the interior defensively just to see how good he's going to be. But he's fun already.
He's been obviously you can't return to this podcast, obviously.
There we go. But obviously he can dunk everything. Really good rebounder. Started adding the corner three to his game late last year. John Collins is going to be a very fun player for a long time.
Like Atlanta has a good young core. They are not going to be good this year, but like the building blocks are there for them to eventually be good with those three guys in particular, I think. That said, Mort, they are not going to be very good this year. And they do have
breaking news.
Kent Bazemore still, you know, just hanging out there, like having no place on a 20-win team because he's a veteran and should be, you know, he fell off based on like he signed that big deal. Because
right.
he had a great year, and then he kind of backslid a little bit. But he has that type of swingman 3-and-D skill set that every contender covets. I think the contract is really the issue. Do you think they trade him by February? And if so, which teams do you think he should be interested in him?
Well, isn't that a false premise, though? You know, when you have a young team, you shouldn't have any veterans. Like I think it's necessary to have veterans, especially with a team like Atlanta that is that young. Like you need to they have new players on both guard spots, like Trae Young and Kevin Huerter. I mean, you know, Taurean Prince is, you know, is just in his third season. Like I think you need a Kent Bazemore on this team to set the tone from a veteran perspective. Like just look, kiddo. Go here, move this way, you know, just to be on a teacher on the court a little bit. I get that he has some value, and I get that he's not locked on a Miami Heat 4-year contract, which is great. Like, he was initially, but not right now.
Not anymore.
Just wait until he's a free agent. Miami's going to be, here's four. but I think you need him. I think you need him around. I think he provides more value to you in terms of being a guy who can take some pressure off the kids than he actually fetches back in a trade. Unless you get a first rounder for him, and you won't.
Right.
If you get a first rounder, then you take it and you say, okay, you know what? Let's look at the free agency market and get someone older in. I know they have Vince, and that's a great asset, but you can't have just one guy holding down the fort. Like from an age perspective, you just can't. Like you need more.
Right.
You don't think Miles Plumlee is that guy?
You're right. Oh my.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's like Jeremy Lin and Dwayne Dedman, but you're right. Otherwise, they are a very, very young team.
They are. They are.
Yeah. I think the problem for them is going to be finding a contender that can make a deal work salary-wise. Like, I think you're right. They would struggle to get a first unless they take back a bad contract, which I think
I see where you're going. Yeah, okay. Yeah. If the player you get back is, you know, an older player who's a willing teacher, then, you absolutely make a deal and take on more money. Are you thinking Nick Batum a little bit, Brian? Something
that I don't even have a guy in mind because I don't think there's no point in Charlotte trading for him because like where are you going?
Yeah,
like,
you're right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't really think of a good place off the top of my head. Like maybe Denver, I guess.
No, they're not messing with their salary structure in any point right now.
That's probably true. I guess they're super, super at the tax.
Well, not
Portland,
just that,
if you
but
can
they
get
just
out of good deal. Evan Turner.
Oh. Oh, man.
That would be fun.
It would be fun. Here's the thing, though. Like, Atlanta is going for that, you know, that whole mentality of let's be the Houston Rockets of the East. Everyone should take like 16 three-pointers a game.
Right.
So Evan Turner doesn't exactly fit that bill.
Yeah.
I want to say. It's a good question, though. It's a good question. I agree with that. You know, you should shop Kent Bazemore in that regard. You should look for a veteran and on a longer deal so you can squeeze out an asset. Absolutely. That's a good idea. Yeah. Go that route instead. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if anyone's going to pursue him, I would keep an eye on Houston.
Yeah.
I absolutely crushed the Ryan Anderson trade. I thought it was awful from Houston's perspective. But I think the only thing that kind of saves
you're welcome
that
welcome back on the podcast now.
I'm kicking you out now. I like
No, but I think the one thing that could possibly save it is if the thinking was, okay, we can't move Ryan Anderson in a first for a wing because his contract is too bad. Brandon Knight is our worst player, but he's a lot cheaper and he's younger. So maybe a team would be more willing to take on Brandon Knight in a first. And I think in that regard, that's where a Kent Bazemore swap becomes more more palatable.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Because, I mean, outside of Trey and Jeremy Lin, they really don't have much backcourt depth. They're like much conventional backcourt depth. So, yeah, that's actually interesting. Mm. I like it.
Yep.
All right, let's finish things up with the team that just gives me a perpetual headache, the Orlando Magic. I mean, like, I have nothing nice to say about this team.
Oh, you didn't like Aaron Gordon.
I do, but I think, like, my huge issue with that, both them and the Phoenix Suns, but at least, like, the Phoenix Suns have a semi-balanced roster where I could sort of see this work. But, like, I've been down this road with Philly a couple years ago. If you don't have a league-average point guard, it doesn't matter if you have talent at the other positions. Like, you're still just going to get destroyed. They have nothing in terms of point guard depth. Like, it's just... Are you really going into the season thinking like, okay, yeah, it's going to be, what, DJ Augustine and Jerry and Grant?
It's the Magic. What did you expect? What did you expect? It's the Magic. And by the way, I love how I totally sounded like your wife. You love Aaron Gordon. Come on here, honey. Love Aaron Gordon.
I do. I mean, I like the front court, but like, and I like Evan Fournier. I like Terrence Ross. Like, they have talent in other positions. I like Jonathan Simmons too.
Yeah.
But if you're relying on those guys, it doesn't matter that you have good players in other positions because you need to get the ball to them, and you have no one who's going to be able to do that.
Well, remember when I said Aaron Gordon could become a, you know, theoretically a rich man Draymond, or a Draymond with athleticism?
Right.
Right. Obviously, that didn't come true. It won't come true. Draymond is a one-of-a-kind specimen. However, you know, we can agree that a guy like Aaron Gordon can at least handle the ball. Like, he can grab a rebound and he can push the ball in transition. So we talked about Denver. We had CJ McBride on this pod. And we were talking about, like, Jamal Murray starts a point guard, but he's a traditional shooting guard. So is Gary Harris, stuff like that. Like, they've trotted out a team that doesn't really have, like, old-fashioned point guards. It is doable if you have playmakers at multiple positions. If Aaron Gordon becomes a better playmaker, and I think he's shown the signs to do that, if Jonathan Isaac can handle the ball a little bit and also initiate the offense, if Evan Fournier can become a bit more of a playmaker than a shooter, even though that is his greatest strength, you can sort of, kind of, make a living that way. I'm not saying it's great. I am saying they certainly need someone who's a more capable ball handler, but they can cut some corners rather effectively.
If you want a 25-win season.
I know. Look, again, that also comes into the lack of talent, though, at the same time. Like, you know, No, I'm not saying it's going to succeed. I'm just saying that's probably their mentality, and I sort of kind of get it. And, you know, it's still Orlando, so obviously whatever they do, I'm still at least skeptical.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even give them that kind of benefit of the doubt, just to be honest with you. It looks like their game plan is get wingspan and figure out the rest.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And there's one hiring in the front office that makes that plan make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
John Hammond is there. So I don't know. Like, that's kind of why I wrote about it over the summer. While I love Mo Bamba, but I hated the pick for him.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of further compounded their roster issue. Like, in theory, Bamba, Gordon, and Isaac in the front court is terrifying defensively. Mm-hmm. But if nobody can shoot, and to Brian's point, they don't have a point guard, like, what does it matter?
Right.
Like, it would not surprise me at all if Orlando is, like, the eighth best defense in the league this year, and they're, like, 29th on offense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what does it mean? Like, right. It just doesn't seem to be much of a plan outside of, let's get long guys that are athletic, and let's see what else happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, you know, we have been – since the start of this podcast, I feel like it's an annual tradition to shit on Orlando for making Aaron Gordon play out of position. And, like, to your point, that's what the Mo Bamba pick does again. Like, now you have, in theory, if your long-term front court is Gordon, Isaac, and Bamba, who's playing the three? It's Aaron Gordon.
No,
who shouldn't be playing the
three? No, Isaac is going to play the three.
Isn't Isaac, like, 6'11"?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. But,
yeah, he's definitely the three in that alignment.
Yeah, he's a little bit more fluid, but here's the thing, though. He's so raw, you don't really know. Like, I know a lot of people are on the Jonathan Isaac is a four wagon, mm-hmm. and that's fine, but we've seen so little of him in the NBA so far. We can't really have a proper understanding so far of what he can do. So I'm still mm-hmm. willing to test that out, Jonathan Isaac at the three. But if it's clear within, you know, the first couple of months that he should be a four, then they need to do something, obviously.
Right. And then now you also have Nikola Vucevic, who he's on an expiring contract, so this isn't a long-term problem. But in theory, he's your starting center, at least to start the year. So, Nikias, if you're the Magic, you know, we're talking about front court logjam here. Like, again, I'm just getting, like, 2015 Philly vibes from this team all over again. And, right. like... other teams know this. This is what kind of screwed Philly when they were trying to deal Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor, aside from, you know, the off-court stuff for both players, was right. like other teams, when another team can exploit leverage over you, they're going to. Just look at what's happening with Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves right now. Like, other teams know Nikola Vucevic is an expiring contract, and the Magic have spent multiple lottery picks in recent years on bigs, so they need to get rid of him. That said, like, should the Magic just, like, be having a fire sale and say, like, get your best offers in for Nikola Vucevic by February 1st because he's going out the door?
They absolutely should. I just don't know where. Like, I was thinking about this before the show. Like, what makes sense for him? Because I guess there are teams where he can start, but ideally you want him as, like, a six man, as a guy that kind of holds your bench offense up. Mm-hmm. But I really couldn't think of anyone that made sense. You know, Boston kind of, but then who do they trade for him? Because there isn't anybody, you know, it feels like Boston would kind of give up more to take in Vooch. Mm-hmm. Memphis, maybe. I don't know. Indiana obviously doesn't need another big man.
Right.
Well, why? I mean, but there's an obvious answer looking both of you in the face right now. Just ship him to Sacramento and say, and, you know, tell Vladdy he's a point guard.
You know really what? Work. I mean, he will be the big man on the team that could shoot. So
yeah. Like, Vladdy, look, Vladdy, he can hit threes. Look at his 3-point field goal percentage. He's a three, Vladdy. Oh. That's right. But we have Marvin Bagley at the three. We can't move Marvin Bagley to the two. Oh, sure. Sure.
I believe how poorly Orlando has mismanaged this. And Sacramento's the only other team that's come close in, like, the big man situation, which is pretty telling.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, like, with the Philly thing, at least you sort of went BPA every time. Like, I'm not totally convinced Orlando did. I think, as you said, Nikias, they're just, like, infatuated with wingspan, and especially with the Isaac pick, they were just like, oh yeah, he's really long. But then they're like, oh wait, but Bamba's even longer. How do we say no? We just have to. So maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe you have to just assume Gordon and Bamba are the pieces, and they're just gonna, like, have to sell low on Isaac at some point, especially because, you know, as you said, Mort, he just didn't play that much last year. I think he already has hurt an ankle this year. Like, it might just be better to cut bait soon before teams figure out, like, you know, maybe he's not going to stay healthy, or maybe he's not going to live up to that draft pick, like, status, like Mario Hezonja did.
Well, okay, the Mario Hezonja thing That's different though. That's Orlando fucking up in a different way. That's them not picking up his fourth year option though.
Right. Like,
they didn't cut bait in the sense of, hey, let's trade him to get an asset in return. They decided, hey, we don't want an asset at all.
Right. I know.
Because yeah, it's the Orlando way.
I hate this team so much. It just made me so mad. Because like I really do like a lot of the players on this roster, but like I just have zero faith. So that's really my question with Orlando is like, I'd say that the Hawks and the Knicks are the popular picks for the worst team in the East. The Knicks, just because we're assuming Kristaps Porzingis misses a lot of the season, and the Hawks just because they're so young and relying on a lot of unproven talent. Right. Do you guys think there's any chance Orlando's actually the worst team in the East this year?
I'm going to say no, just because I think their defense is going to give them a floor.
Okay.
If they can catch a team that doesn't take them seriously off guard and kind of stifle them, they can kind of eke out those 93-87 games. But yeah, they're going to be pretty bad because the team just does not make much sense. And God bless Steve Clifford for having to try to clean that up. Like, I just don't know how they score points.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if Evan Fournier doesn't turn into a 25-point-per-game scorer, they're screwed.
It's weird because, I mean, like, even in Charlotte, I mean, obviously Kimball was there, but you could at least say, all right, Kimball, we're going to run high pick and roll with you. You're going to pull up from three or you're going to get to the rim, and that's how we're going to manufacture looks. Mm-hmm. DJ Augustine can shoot, but, I mean, if DJ Augustine has to be your lead ball handler, you can't expect much.
Yeah. Well,
he's a very good reserve, but he's miscast right now.
Yeah. Yeah. This team's going to be a disaster. I'm sorry, Orlando fans. One day it'll get better, I hope. The Lakers is the one team that like just doesn't have a center right now, so maybe Vucevic could trade like KCP for him, but
well,
that's really it. I don't
Hang on. You said that the future is going to be better. I'm just looking at the 2019 draft pool. Oh no, the future's not going to get better. that's not great.
Oh boy. Well, that's a good place to wrap things up. Now that we've lost every Magic fan that ever listened to our pod, I think it's probably time. So Nikias, thank you again for joining us. Remind our listeners one more time where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA, NekiasNBA. You can catch my words at Miami Heat Beat, B-Ball Breakdown eventually, on the B-Ball Index eventually. And if you have podcast, if you want me on your podcast, hit me up. I'm trying to get reps, so I am here.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on at some point this season because Lord knows Miami's going to be interesting. Hopefully this Jimmy Butler thing gets resolved soon for your own sake. But in the meantime, please, everyone, give Nikias a follow, if only for the entertainment when he sends these just eyeballs tweets. It is really good stuff. In the meantime, please give us a follow on Twitter as well, at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow too. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And you can find us now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter, at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Nikias Duncan. Have a good one, guys.
Luka Doncic should have been kept by Atlanta.
God damn it.